found cricket really, especially during the beginning, I found I internalised everything and I kind of got into my own head about it, and there was a lot of blame and a lot of perfectionism and all those kind of words. But I'm definitely getting there, definitely getting better, taking pressure off a little bit, because it's difficult, isn't it? It's like, it used to be a hobby and it used to be something we used to do because we loved it, and now it's our job. But I still love it. Like, I still love the game of cricket. I think that's what you've got to remember. I could do any job. Like, I could quit tomorrow and do any job. But I want to play cricket.
Despite being just 29 years old, Fee Morris has already learned a lot about herself throughout her cricketing career. From making her county championship debut aged 14 to becoming one of the country's first professional athletes outside the centralised England setup, to top scoring for her team in the first ever women's 100 final, and much more, there have been plenty of moments for Fee to celebrate so far. But it has been a far from easy ride for the all-rounder. An incident in her early 20s led to a severe decline in Fee's mental health and well-being, which she struggled to admit and accept, and ultimately led to her taking a two-year break from the sport and, as she says in her own words, going off the rails a bit. And while advances in the women's game have seen the introduction of regionalised professional contracts, Fee also said that she initially struggled to cope with the pressure she placed on herself as one of the first athletes to be offered one of these deals. But all of this has taught Fee a key lesson that we can all learn from, and that is to embrace what you love. Having recently moved to Northwest Thunder to play alongside former Sportsfield guests Kate Cross and Alex Hartley, Fee reveals how she's had a new lease of life and cannot wait for the season to begin in the coming months. This has further been aided by the continual help and support she receives from the PCA and the Professional Cricketers Trust with her mental health. In a wide-ranging and wonderfully honest interview, Fee also speaks about how the women's game can continue to grow in the coming years, her new business adventure that combines her passion for cricket and helping to rehabilitate injured athletes, and also how she became a mentor with our wonderful partners at the Mintridge Foundation. Welcome back, listeners, to another episode of Sportsbill. And I'm delighted to say that we are joined by our fifth professional cricketer on the show, our third women's cricketer. And unlike the last two, I'm hoping this one doesn't call me a psychopath, but we'll see how it goes. So I'm delighted to welcome Fee Morris to the show. So Fee, lovely to meet you. And we're at the end of another, I say, bizarre year, not quite as strange as 2020 and 2021, but a lot's happened this year. How do you reflect on your 2022? How's it gone from your perspective?
I'd say it's been a year of growth. I reckon that's the word I'd use to describe it. It's been a lot of learnings this year. It's not been the easiest, but the last couple of months have been to the best I've had in a long time. Like, I've moved up to Manchester, about 2 months ago, and I'm absolutely loving it. It was a little bit of a difficult summer for me, cricket-wise and just life-wise, but yeah, it seems to have worked out right in the end, so I'm hoping we can carry that on for the next, I don't know, 15, 16 days until 2023.
You mentioned there you've moved up to Manchester, you've joined the Thunder, you've been in training with them. How are you finding it? How are you settling in?
Oh, I'm absolutely loving it. It was a really difficult decision as to whether or not I've even carried on playing cricket, because it's quite a big move for me coming up north. But yeah, I've absolutely loved it. Like, the girls are brilliant. It's such a good group. It's probably the most together group I've been a bit a part of. The coaches have been great to work with. It's an unbelievably professional setup. The amount of money that Lancashire have put into women's cricket over the last couple of years is really starting to pay off. And yeah, it's kind of reinvigorated my love for the game, which is exactly what I wanted and probably more than I expected. So yeah, it sounds really cliche, but I'm actually loving every minute of it so far anyway, yeah.
And how is that transition as a professional athlete, joining a new club, settling with a new group of people? Is that always quite tricky, or is it sort of the more you do it, the more you get used to it?
Yeah, probably the more you do it, you get used to it, I guess. I have moved around quite a lot anyway, just just from teams that I've played for before and living in different cities and that kind of thing. So I guess you just get to know people on the circuit, and then every time you do move, you kind of already know a couple of people just from playing against them and with them. But yeah, this has been probably my easiest transition. I just straight away felt really at home here. So I thought, yeah, I feel really lucky for that. But also it's probably has been a bit easier because I've done it a couple of times before as well.
Women's cricket is undergoing quite a big change at the moment, a big development. A lot of things are happening. You yourself have now spent 2 years as a professional cricketer. How have you found that, being able to do what you love full time almost?
Yeah, this has been going into my third year. Being really honest, I've actually found it really difficult. I think, being completely honest, the team I was at before probably wasn't the right place for me to be. And it was a really difficult transition, I think. You know, I had a full-time career before I started being a pro cricketer as a sports therapist, and I loved it, and I was good at it, and I was really building a good client base and building my business there. And I thought it was going to be a bit different to what it was, kind of transitioning to being a pro. And for like a few reasons, it just didn't really work out for me down in Bristol, and that's absolutely fine. But it seems to be, yeah, the last couple of months is a lot more what I thought it was going to be, and I just feel a lot more settled here. So it's been hard work. Like, the work is pretty hard. There's a lot of fitness there. My body's been pretty sore, but yeah, I'm really, really enjoying it now. So yeah, just hoping I can take that into the season, really, because that's where it actually matters.
It's interesting you say that, because from the outside and from what we hear, people are so enthused that we've got professional cricketers outside of the England set up in the domestic game. But from what you're saying there, maybe it isn't that becoming a professional cricketer isn't that easy as, or, you know, glamorous as it might seem. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think some people probably have taken to it like a duck to water. I think because, you know, I'm a little bit older than a few of the girls playing. I actually think the girls that had careers before being a pro, so a few of the slightly older girls, I've probably found it a little bit more difficult. Yeah, just because we're used to that kind of 9 to 5 job and it being a bit more stable, and you're not used to the up and down emotions of professional sport, and that's what we haven't been used to. Whereas the girls, just the 20-year-olds, the 18-year-olds that are going straight into being a pro, that's all they've known. So yeah, I would say from my experience of it, it's the older girls that have probably struggled a little bit more. But yeah, like I said, I just wasn't in the right environment for me. It just didn't fit with me. And hopefully I am now. So hopefully I can kind of push forward a little bit more, and that's not to say I didn't enjoy it before, but I probably struggled a little bit more than I would have wanted to.
Alongside the professional contracts, there's also been two new or reformatted tournaments introduced in the Rachel Hayhoe Flint Trophy and the Charlotte Edwards Cup. You've had the 100, you've got county tournaments as well. It seems like there's a lot of cricket going on. Is it more than what you were used to before, or is it more of a case of we're more aware of it as consumers and followers?
Yeah, probably a bit of a mixture. Like, there's obviously a lot more talk about it now, and I think the 100's been really important for that. Like, playing alongside men, playing the double headers with the men has been great. But actually, I think it's a brilliant tournament in its own right, the women's tournament. And it's been a lot of surprise to a lot of people that have gone, ah, they're actually pretty good, and you're going, yeah, we're all right at cricket, you know. So yeah, I think it's just a bit of a mixture, and I still think in the last couple of years we haven't played enough cricket. I didn't play very much cricket at all last summer, and the fixtures, there's a lot more fixtures this year, which is, it's the right thing to do, and it's much better for us as players. I'd much rather play than train. So yeah, hopefully we can just keep pushing it forward to it.
And you mentioned the 100 there. What's it like to have been a part of the 100s over the last couple of seasons? How have you found it?
Yeah, it's pretty surreal, to be honest. I walking in, so I played for Southern Brave in the first year, and we got through to the final, and I think it was 17,000 people or something there. And it was pretty mad. walking out to the middle and being like, oh, right, okay, they're all here to watch me, they're all here to watch us. And yeah, just the whole aura around it, it's just really exciting. It's so much fun. I think that's what I just say to people. It's so much fun. It's like, then that's what it's meant to be. You know, the hundreds, it's not meant to be this really serious, like Ashes kind of vibe tournament. It's meant to be like a festival kind of thing, and a lot of fun, and all of us playing it, we just have the best time. And yeah, I think the cricket speaks for itself. Like if you're having a good time, you generally play a bit better. So I think the standard's been pretty unbelievable. It's been tough bowling against some of the best players in the world, definitely. But yeah, it's been a big learning curve, loads of fun, and just, yeah, great thing to be a part of, really.
And what's it like for yourself as a player who earlier on in your career were playing and the county game was getting no coverage and the women's game was getting little coverage, not playing at big stadiums, to then going from that to almost overnight playing in front of tens of thousands and playing in these big stadiums, TV coverage? How have you found that?
Yeah, I think that was quite a big issue a few years ago when it used to be the Kia Super League, because we go from playing at pretty much club grounds or club second team pitches sometimes, to then playing at, I don't know, Hove or Bristol or wherever, or the Oval, and being on telly, and you're like, it's too big of a jump, it's too big of a gap. Like the nerves were just crazy because we weren't used to it. Whereas we're starting to get a bit more used to it now. And I think this year we've got five games at Old Trafford. And just even being in and around there and training there, and just knowing what it feels like to walk into a test stadium. Even just going through the gates, like a few years ago, I would have been nervous just going through the gates. And now I go through the gates pretty much every day. So yeah, it's just trying to close that gap between the top and kind of here. And we're definitely getting there. I think every year it gets better. I just wish we'd stop saying, oh, it's getting better, and just be like, no, we're there. But I'm sure we will be there one day.
How exciting is it to be a female cricketer at the moment with all this change going on? And as you say, hopefully in a few years' time, we won't be talking about this. It will just be the norm. But sort of having from where you started out compared to where it is now, so yeah, how do you find that?
Yeah, so it's absolutely crazy, really, to think about it. Like I remember when I used to play down in Hampshire, so I used to play for Hampshire County, and we won the county champs a few years ago. It was probably about 6 years ago now. And I remember we were all sat around like celebrating with a bottle of beer or something like that, and then our manager came around and asked us for our match fees. I was like, I can't believe that we've just won the county champs and I'm having to give a tenner for match fees. And then 5 years later, we're playing, yeah, professional cricketer and going in and being paid to train every day. It's absolutely crazy the amount it's improved. And you can see how much the standards improve. Like, it's just living proof that if you invest, you get a hell of a lot back. And I think investment into women's sport in general, not just women's cricket at the moment, is anyone would be sensible to do it, because you get so much back from it. And you see, like, you look at the standard of the 100, just even the last 2 years, the difference between the 2 years is massive. So it's just going to keep climbing and climbing. So yeah, I'm pretty proud to be a part of it, actually. It's pretty cool to be a part of it. But yeah, hopefully this is just the beginning, really.
And as you mentioned before, you were part of the first ever 100 finals day. Obviously didn't quite go your way on the day. It's like you were top scorer for the Brave on that day. But yeah. How do you reflect on that game and that experience?
It still hurts, but actually it was still pretty good in. But I think just as a day, it was, yeah, like nothing I'd ever experienced before. The excitement around it, I don't think I was even nervous, because there was no time to be nervous. And yeah, I probably was when I was walking out to bat, but I can't even remember it. It's all a big blur. But yeah, I mean, obviously guessing we didn't go over the line, but I think to even have just been there for the first ever final, to play at Lord's in a final, that's not something I ever thought I would do. So yeah, it's a really proud moment for me, and something I won't ever forget. My mum and dad were actually there. My mum didn't watch any of it. She was way too nervous. But yeah, to have mum and dad there as well, it's always pretty nice, isn't it?
playing in front of those big crowds and that increased viewership of and awareness of the women's game, have you found that you've got a lot more people recognizing you and wanting to actually speak to you after games and get your autograph? And if so, sort of how do you find that?
After games, like it's pretty cool just seeing all the kids, and it's actually probably not even always kids anymore. It always used to be that I wait for the kids to because they want you to sign their hat or whatever, and it's not just kids now. But it still takes a bit of getting used to, I think. But I think in the 100, I'm probably the last signature that they want. They all want Danny Wyatt and Tammy Beaumont, and then I'm kind of the one that, oh yeah, we'll have those as well. But yeah, it's definitely still pretty surreal, and it's always really funny, like if any of my friends from school or uni or work or whatever come and watch, and they all just find it hilarious watching me signing autographs. They're like, you're signing autographs. But it's cool. It just, again, it just shows how much the game's growing, and how much more interest there is out there. And you do really forget how much people love it, and how much, I guess, like young kids do look up to you. And it's good to see, but you do definitely forget how like what you are actually a part of sometimes. So it's good. It's definitely nice to have that to kind of remind you.
And how important is it not just having games at a good time for people to watch or go and attend them and playing in the proper stadiums, but also just the increased coverage around other tournaments as well? So, for example, I've noticed in the last couple of years, a lot more live streams of women's games and a lot more TV coverage, and even just going on the BBC Sport or ESPN Cricket Info websites and being able to see your scorecards from the Hey Ho Flint Trophy or the Charlotte Edwards Cup. How important is that, that actually becomes the norm and we just get to know names like yours and your ex-teammates and your current teammates, even those that aren't playing for England?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's really important that we don't just see women's cricket as the 100, because that's kind of the pinnacle and that's where we get all the overseas players. But actually, all the hard work gets put in over the winter and by our regions, and that's where we play most of our cricket. So I think that, you know, our regional cricket is more important than the 100. It doesn't get as much attention, but it's a lot more important for us. I think, you know, the coverage is getting better. It's got a long way to go. I don't know if you saw the England v West Indies. They're out there at the moment in the streams.
BT Sport 5 with a very, very questionable stream.
Yeah, so it's that, you know, things like that. It's really disappointing, actually. And it felt like a bit of a backward step. But I think in general, it is getting better. But there's still a really long way to go. And I think our regional cricket, you know, it still needs a lot more attention than it does have. It's better than it was a few years ago. So it's an upwards curve, as we keep saying.
Yeah. What other changes would you like to see in women's cricket, either the way it's run or the way it's covered? Sort of what are the things that you think going forward are the next steps to take?
Yeah, so I think they're introducing more contracts into the teams in February, March, I think, which will bring it up to, I think it's 11 full-time pros in each team, maybe 10. But I think just increasing them year on year. You know, when we first started out as pro, I think it was just 5 of us that were full-time. So the rest of the girls were just having to kind of come to training in and around work and school commitments and that kind of thing. So I think just the most important thing is investing in players and investing in facilities. So each region having their own base and having a squad of full-time professional players, that's where we want to get to, and I'm sure we will.
Sportspiel is proud to be partners with the Mintridge Foundation, founded in 2015 by Managing Director Alex Wallace. The charity is dedicated to enhancing life skills in young people through sport. They provide a support network for young people by harnessing the power of sporting role models and have several wonderful ambassadors, many of whom have been guests on this show. The Mintridge Foundation assists young people of all ages, abilities and physical capabilities to develop confidence and resilience, and creates awareness of the importance of mental and physical well-being through sport. Another wonderful example of just how powerful sport can be to everyone. To find out more, go to mintridgefoundation.org.uk, or you can find a link in the episode show notes.
And you mentioned there that when you first joined, there were sort of five pros in the squad and other people that were not pros. How do you find that? And how does that affect like the dynamic in the team, that some of you are there fully professional and there are others that are, yeah, like you say, still doing other jobs or even at school?
Yeah, I think some of it depends on which region you're in. You know, being here at Thunder, you'd come into training, you'd have no idea who was full-time and who wasn't. The girls here actually get paid to train in the winter, which is brilliant. And that shows how much Lancashire are investing into us, which is, it's really good to see. And that means we get a lot more girls at training. But I think a lot of the regions don't have that, and they only have their pros training, or they have separate training sessions and the numbers aren't as high. So I guess it depends which region you're in. But I think that's why I'm probably enjoying Thunder so much, is because it feels like a whole squad, and it feels like everyone gets treated the same, whether you're full-time or whether you're not full-time pro. That's the way it's going, and that's the way it should be going.
Doing my research and reading around this, I remember seeing something where you mentioned about the pressure of being a pro cricketer and how that's quite a bit different. I know it's something we touched on previously, but I was wondering if you could sort of explain a bit more about that and sort of how you feel that sort of pressure shows itself, or how it comes about.
Yeah, I think a lot of it depends on who you are as a person and what your experiences are. For me, because I wasn't the best behaved person when I was younger, especially when it came to cricket, I went through a real phase, especially when first turning pro, putting so much pressure on myself to almost make up for lost time and go, okay, well, you didn't train, you didn't do anything when you were 19, 20, 21, up to about 24. So you've now got to train 100 miles an hour all the time to make up for that lost time. And if you're not, then you've been rubbish, you need to do a bit more. And then if I wasn't performing, I'd then go, well, it's because you didn't train when you were 20, because you didn't take it seriously when you were 22. And it just went, it was this kind of circle, went round in circles in my head. And if you have my job before, though, it was pressure in a different way. You know, I was there to help people, and it was a different sort of pressure, but it wasn't so internal. I found cricket really, especially during the beginning, I found I internalised everything and I kind of got into my own head about it. And there was a lot of blame and a lot of perfectionism and all those kind of words. But I'm definitely getting there. I'm definitely getting better, taking the pressure off a little bit. Because it's difficult, isn't it? It used to be a hobby, and it used to be something we used to do because we loved it. And now it's our job. But I still love it. Like, I still love the game of cricket. I think that's what you've got to remember. I could do any job. Like, I could quit tomorrow and do any job. But I want to play cricket. And that's, I just got to keep reminding myself of that sometimes.
And cricket's a sport that you've been playing at a high level since you were very young. Was it 14 when you made your county first 11 debut?
Yeah, that sounds about right, actually. I was tiny as well. I didn't grow till I was about 17, so I must have looked ridiculous on that cricket pitch. I was pretty young when I first played.
And how did you get into the sport in the first place? What was it that drew you to cricket?
Really classic, really boring. Dad, brother used to play. So my brother used to play at Gloucestershire. So he was, I think he was semi-pro at Gloucester. Just playing in the garden, and then just got into it through that way, really. My mum was the one that pushed me to go and play, actually. Just dad, brother, family, same old.
What was it like being a girl playing cricket at that age, or did you not really think about it, really? You just wanted to play the game?
I think when I was really young, I didn't really think about it. I'm from quite a big family, so I'm the youngest of seven, and all three of my sisters are like really strong, independent, strong, independent women that are just like, I don't care about what gender I am or whatever. So I never really went into it going, oh, I'm not sure about being a girl in a boys' sport. I've got three brothers and I'm better than them. So I didn't really care too much about that. But I think the older I got, actually, was probably where it became more difficult for me. Like when I was when I was really young, I didn't care. And then as soon as I got into being like 15, 16, I was all of a sudden going, oh, I don't want to be the only girl anymore. This is annoying. This is frustrating. And yeah, I kind of just started going, I don't want my whole life to be around cricket. And I don't just want to be surrounded by boys all the time playing cricket. I want to have my own life outside of it. So yeah, for some people, they probably struggle when they're a bit younger. But for me, it was actually when I started to get a bit older that I was going, oh, I want to be more of a part of a girls team and get away from just playing bloody boys all the time.
Do you find it, because I've spoken to some athletes before, that they actually like it when families or, you know, people they've grown up with or people they live with don't do their sport, so actually there almost isn't that, you there's a chance to get away from the sport, in your case cricket. Is that something that you found with your families, that actually it's nice to just go back and be Fee the person and just chat about anything else that isn't cricket?
Yeah, 100%. I don't know if it's because I'm from a big family and mum and dad don't have the time to do it, but they didn't really ever put any pressure on me. You know, I had a couple of years out from playing when I was 21, 22 maybe, and there was never any pressure. There was never any making me feel bad for taking time out. Even now, like, or even when I was younger, if I didn't do very well, they were like, ah, it's fine, move on. And I feel really lucky for that. And I think some of that is probably because I come from such a big family, and they go, well, we can't put pressure on everyone, so we might as well just not put pressure on anyone. But yeah, it's like I can, like my sister, they all know cricket and they know the rules and they know what's going on, but they don't ever really ask me about it or talk about it. And yeah, that's really important, especially for someone like me. I really need that switch off time, and it's great that I can get that from my family as well.
You mentioned that your parents are not putting pressure on you. Even though they weren't doing that, you were still performing at a high level at a very young age, as we mentioned before, sort of making your county debut at 14 and performing really well in those early years. But what was it like being, you know, a school kid playing alongside a lot older people? How did you find that?
Yeah, it probably made me grow up a lot quicker, actually. I've never really thought about it in that way, but yeah, it probably did make me grow up a lot quicker. You just used to being around older people, and I guess I quite enjoyed it because, again, like I'm the youngest of seven, so I've got six older brothers and sisters, and I was always used to being around older people. But actually, probably in cricket as well, I was. Yeah, and I think that's probably helped me now, I guess. I think at the time, maybe not so much. It was, you know, I always felt like I was the baby and the little one, and yeah, I was always kind of following other people and seeing what they were doing. And I think at the time that maybe probably dented my confidence a little bit, but now it's probably, in the long run, I don't know, 10, 12 years later, it's actually finally starting to work out. But it's been great to know a lot of range of ages and a lot of people from a lot of different backgrounds. I've got that through cricket.
Do you remember a specific moment, or was there a specific moment where you, it sort of dawned on you that, you know, I'm quite good at this, or was it just you were just playing it because you enjoyed it and weren't really thinking about that?
I'm not sure. I don't even think it's hit me yet. I'm still waiting for that moment. No, I think when I was younger, I was part of the I got picked in the England Academy when I was 16, 17, I think. So I was quite young. And I think like a lot of people, I went through that stage of being like, oh, look at me. I'm the big I'm from the now. And yeah, just it was actually probably came from a real place of insecurity where I went, oh, I really don't feel good enough to be here. So I'm just going to act like I am instead. I think that happens with so many people. And then you kind of get, you know, I got dropped from the academy when I was 18 and kind of everything kind of came crashing back down to earth. But it was actually probably a good thing in the long run. Yeah, I think I was too young to be a part of that. I know that. And I didn't respond very well to it. And it didn't work out. But actually, probably now, it's taught me a lot. And yeah, still, I would never take it for granted and never go, I know I'm going to be a professional cricketer for the next 5 years, because you never really know what's going to happen, especially after, you know, obviously moving up here. So I think it's really important to never just think, oh, I've made it. Oh yeah, I'm good enough. It's, you know, you've always got to think that, well, there's really good players underneath me as well. So I've just got to keep getting better.
And you mentioned earlier on in the interview about, and I think trying to not misquote you, but you said that your behaviour sort of around cricket, you weren't necessarily the best of. I'm just wondering if you'd had like a chance to think back on that and maybe think about why that was the case.
Yeah, I think, you know, like I just said, I think I was just way too young. I was probably quite an immature 16, 17 year old. And that really showed when I got selected for the England Academy. And I think like it happens to a few people, you just then I'm probably gonna play for England then. So actually that's fine. Like I've made it now, I'm fine. And that obviously didn't work out. And the girls that were working hard, they pushed on and I didn't. And I think a lot of that definitely came from an insecurity, and probably knowing in my heart that I wasn't good enough to be there. So instead I went, oh, well, I'm just going to act like I don't care then. I'm going to kind of throw my toys out of pram and not train. And then if I don't train and I don't make it, then I haven't really lost anything. And I can go, well, I don't really care anyway. So yeah, that being really honest, that's probably where it came from. I like to think I'm not like that at all now, which I shouldn't be, being 28.
And was there a similar question to what I asked previously, was there a moment when you sort of recognised that and actively wanted to make a change, or has that sort of been a more of a gradual process over the years?
It's definitely been a gradual process. I think there probably has even been times in the last couple of years where I've gone, oh, don't care anyway, don't even want to do this anyway. And it's a lot more fleeting now. It's not like a permanent thing that I actually think now. But yeah, it's just been a gradual process. And I think as my confidence in myself has increased, the amount I train and how hard I work has increased with that. And that's because I'm not afraid to fail anymore, or I'm not as afraid to fail anymore, still getting there. But, you know, I don't think anymore, oh, well, if I try and then I fail, then I've lost everything. Whereas, that's what used to go through my mind. Whereas now I go, well, if I try and I fail, at least I can say I've tried. So yeah, it's been a really gradual process, and something that I think everyone still works on, and everyone struggles with a bit sometimes. But yeah, we're getting there.
You mentioned being afraid to fail, and that's just sort of jogged my memory. Listening to a Tail Enders podcast a few weeks ago, that they made a comment on it that cricket is essentially a sport that sets you up to fail more than it does for you to succeed. So how do you sort of deal with that? Because especially as a batter, you're more likely to fail than you are to succeed. But how do you mentally sort of deal with that as a player?
Yes, that's a $1 million question. Cricket's like a toxic relationship, isn't it? You have one good innings and about five, and then you keep coming back. I think I'm really lucky, like I'm a bowler as well. So I'm actually really lucky in the sense that if I do fail batting wise, I can hopefully bowl well. But I think the most important thing is training to fail as well. So actually, Tara, one of the girls that plays at Thunder as well, said something really cool the week where she said, every training session I go into, I want to fail at something. I thought that was a really good way of looking at it, just going, right, I'm going to put 100% into this session. I'm going to really push myself. And if I fail at something, that's brilliant. That's perfect. So that means I've really pushed myself. And if my ceiling's here and I've pushed to here, then next week I can keep pushing it. I thought that was a really great way of looking at it. And I think really pushing yourself in training and doing things outside of your comfort zone gets you used to it. And then in a game, if you fail, you'll go, well, I made the right decision. I've trained really hard. I've done the right things. Just wasn't my day. That's the theory. putting into practice doesn't always work. But that's the theory of it. Anyway.
Cricket's one of those bizarre sports, isn't it? That it's a team sport, but it's also so individual as well. And you mentioned there sort of the pressure on yourself, sort of, yeah, how does that sort of work in your head, and how do you sort of get used to that actually sort of like an individual performance can have such an impact on the whole team?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it is a bit of a weird sport in that sense. It is quite individual. I think just really taking it back to basics. Again, it sounds a bit cliche, but just remembering why you're there, and you can't have 11 players every single game being player of the match. That's never going to happen. So just going, well, if I can contribute or if I can win a game, one in every five or one in every six, that's my job. And yeah, just really bringing it back to basics. And just try not to think about the big picture. Just while you're there, just think, I'm just going to enjoy this and do my thing. And then hopefully that, everything else will take care of itself.
We've spoken there about sort of, the individual nature of cricket and the more likely to fail than not, but obviously there are amazing moments. What are some of the highlights that you've experienced as a player? What are the really good moments that stand out to you?
Oh, that's a good question. Probably taking my first wicket in the 100. It was at Lord's, which is obviously like it's the best ground in the world, most special ground in the world. Yeah, I think it took me a few games actually. I was kind of in there as like a holding bowler, so I wasn't really there to take wickets, I guess. But I think I played the first four games and didn't take a wicket, and then finally took my first wicket at Lord's, and that was, yeah, really special. I think just I'm not really someone like I'm not really not a stats person at all. So like taking the most wickets or scoring the most wins isn't something I'm overly bothered about. But I think yeah, the first few games at Storm when I first joined Western Storm when we first turned pro, my first few games as a professional cricketer was probably the most proud I've been, because you walk out there and you're going, right, this is it now. Like this is what we're here for. I can't even remember how we did or how I played it or anything, but just yeah, the first few games of being pro, so it was pretty special.
Make sure you follow Sportspiel on social media. Search for Sportspiel Pod on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or on LinkedIn.
Gonna switch topics slightly a little bit now, but something else I'm very interested to get into is just over a year ago you did quite a powerful interview that made quite a lot of headlines and opened up and shared your story. So I was just wondering if for those who may be listening to the podcast hadn't heard the story, weren't aware of it, if you could just in your own words sort of describe what you shared in that story and why you chose to open up and be so incredibly honest, which is so much respect for you for doing that.
When I was probably, I can't remember how old it was now, about 20, so going into my last year of university, I went through quite a major trauma, and my mental health just really declined from there. It's probably something I struggled with anyway. I'm just going to move out the sun because it came in front of me.
Oh,
Yeah,
it
probably
always rained in
something
Manchester.
that, something that I've struggled with anyway for a number of years, but just one incident, one night of my life, what really escalated everything, and I've really struggled with my mental health for quite a number of years. Went really up and down. I decided to quit cricket because I remember being on the pitch at one point and going, I can't even look after myself. Like, I'm barely getting out of bed and I'm here playing cricket. And I felt really guilty and really embarrassed that I was taking the place of someone else on the pitch that would really want to be there, and I really didn't want to be there. I remember that exact moment where I just went, I can't. I looked at the girl on the sideline that wasn't playing because I was, and I went, I cannot take her place. She deserves to be here a lot more than I do. And I'm about 5% here. So yeah, I had a couple of years out from cricket. Like really, I guess went off the rails a bit. Like really, just had no self-respect for myself. Didn't want a job. Didn't want to try anything. Didn't want to have a career. Was barely turning up to work. was barely getting out of bed. At one point, I didn't have anywhere to live. I was living on a friend's sofa because I just didn't really know what I was doing. And then, yeah, really luckily, I got back in touch with Nick Denning, who I used to work with. He was one of my coaches, and when I was a bit younger, and just said, look, Nick, I really need to sort myself out, and I really think that getting back into cricket would help me with that. It would give me a focus and give me something to work towards and something outside of partying and drinking. And he just said, yeah, absolutely. And he sorted me out straight away with playing back down in Hampshire. And I'd love to say that that was where I went, oh, right, I'm fine now. I've got cricket back in my life. I don't need to worry about mental health anymore. But unfortunately, that wasn't quite the case. And I still really, really struggled with it. And then when I turned pro, I went, right, I actually really, really need to sort this out now. Like, I'm not just working anymore. I'm playing in front of hundreds of people and with a team around me. And my mental health now is not just affecting me, it's actually affecting other people and affecting my team and going into work, into training, etc. And so, yeah, I started talking to someone. I got a lot of help through the PCA, or the Professional Cricketers Trust. And they sent me up with a therapist, and here we are. We're doing better. I'm not 100% by any stretch of the imagination. I have some days are really good, some days are really bad, but much more myself. I'm much more honest about how I'm feeling and much more open about it. And that's what we've been working on, and that's where I am now.
The honesty you mentioned there, so I know from my personal experience, that's something I struggle with being, is honest with myself about what's really going on. And when you were having those difficult times, when you had those couple of years out of cricket, were you aware of the fact that, you know, thinking this isn't right, or were you being honest with yourself, or were you sort of even hiding things from yourself as well?
Yeah, I had absolutely no self-awareness whatsoever. I think I probably knew deep down that there was something not quite right, but I've had no self-awareness whatsoever. There's actually a really long time that I don't really remember a lot of things that happened, because I was just kind of floating. I was in my own little world, or not even in my world, in some other crazy world. I don't know what was going on, but really didn't have that self-awareness, really couldn't be open about it. Felt just really, really embarrassed that my life had been almost turned upside down by just one single event. And I don't talk about it all the time now. It's not something I walk down the street going, hiya, look at me. But I can walk into training now and say to one of the girls, I feel a bit rough today. Like, I'm feel really anxious today. I've got really anxious belly. And probably two out of the 11 girls will go, oh, yeah, me too. And it kind of just makes you feel a bit more normal and a bit more human and going, all right, I wish none of us felt anxious, but actually it's quite nice that three of us are in it together. I think at the time it wasn't, you know, I wasn't just thinking, oh, I'm a bit anxious. It was probably a lot more than that. But yeah, but I definitely didn't have that self-awareness, and there was no honesty around it whatsoever with no one. I never ever spoke to anyone about it. That's the way it was.
Interesting. You recall a moment there on the cricket pitch where it all sort of hit you. And it's very similar to something Kate Cross mentioned as well. So she's one of our previous guests, that she was feeling down. I think it was at fine leg and sort of burst into tears. Was that a realization that something needed to change, or sort of what, when that moment happened to you, what were your sort of immediate reflections afterwards?
Yeah, I think, I had a panic attack during the Super League games, and I think I was still just massively in denial. I think I just thought, oh, it's just because I'm nervous, or it's just because of cricket, I just can't. It's actually crazy to think back now and think how in denial about it all I was. I couldn't admit to myself that there was anything wrong, because I didn't want there to be anything. I think that was the thing. I wanted to be 100% all the time, and I really put a lot of pressure on being 100% all the time. So I didn't want there to be anything slightly different about the way my brain works, or something that I needed to talk to someone about. It just seemed all a bit too big and a bit too scary. But luckily I had the physio in at Swithin Bike, that's where I was playing at the time, was absolutely amazing. And she basically forced me to go and speak to someone. So I would definitely owe a lot to her. But yeah, I think that's the key, isn't it? Like, it sounds really cliche, but surround yourself with good people and good things will happen. Like, I wouldn't be here today if I hadn't had amazing people around me. So that's definitely the key. People that want to see you shine, I guess, and want to see you get better. Those are people you want to be around. And it might be a difficult conversations, but they're the right ones to have and the good ones to have.
When you go to see a therapist and speak to someone for the first time, how did you find that opening up, or did you not open up? Was it quite a difficult process for you?
Yeah, I think probably the thing that I struggled most with, definitely opening up, like, it took me months to actually be my authentic self. I was still trying to make her laugh and try and be happy all the time. She was there going, I know, I've done this job for a long time. I know when someone's faking it. But yeah, I think actually probably a really big thing for me was I always blamed my mental health struggles with this trauma, and I put everything on that. And I said, well, if that hadn't happened, I would be fine. And actually finally admitting that I probably would have struggled anyway, and that's just the way that I am, and that my mental health is quite up and down. That was a big thing for me, like actually realising, not just blaming one event for the knock-on effect to the next 6 years, although that probably had a big effect, but not just blaming everything on that and going, right, this is the way that I am and that's fine. You just got to work with it, work with what you've got.
Yeah, something I can definitely resonate with there, like the blaming of one event, and something you mentioned earlier, sort of like the embarrassment as well, is something I can definitely relate to. But you then chose to come out and do that interview just over a year ago. What made you want to sort of put that in the public domain, and how did it make you feel actually doing that, and then the response you got to it as well?
Yeah. I think it was, I was really umming and ahhing whether I was going to do it, because I'm quite I've always been quite like a private, not massively private, but quite reserved, and not, again, not really someone that ever wanted to talk about stuff. And I didn't want it to turn into like, oh, look at me, like, look what I've been through, poor me. But then I sat down and thought, well, when I saw Crossy's interview, Kate Crossy's interview, when she spoke about it, did I think that about her? And I was like, no, of course I didn't. I just thought, wow, that's amazing. I'm like really grateful that she's done that, because that makes me feel better. And as soon as I started to think of it in that way, I thought, oh, actually, the PCA and the Cricketers Trust have done so much for me. Like, they've honestly been amazing. This is a great opportunity for me to say thank you and to encourage other people to go and speak to them as well, because of how much they've helped me. And I just thought, if I can do that, it's no skin off my nose. I don't mind opening up and talking about my struggles. I'm quite happy to do that now. So if I can do that, and if one person listens and goes, oh, I'll go speak to someone, then yeah, that's why I did it, really.
And sort of, yeah, seeing all that positive response, or maybe you've heard stories but other people have felt inspired to come out and seek help or feel like they can resonate with your journey, how does that make you feel? Does that make you feel like it was worthwhile to open up and speak out about it?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, definitely. I think that I didn't expect it to get that big of a response and that many people to see it and that many people to send me a message. And I just thought a couple of people would see it and then I'd never hear of it again. And it was pretty overwhelming. And it made me feel a bit better as well, which is quite nice. I know there's a lot of people supporting you, but it was 100. I'm so glad I did it. I'm so glad I spoke about it. It wasn't the easiest interview ever, but of course it wasn't. I never have, but you know, if I can speak, I feel really lucky now that I'm in a position now that I can speak about it. So I want to use that as much as I can.
And I guess for your, what would be a key message for people maybe listening to this, who maybe think they are struggling a little bit or know that they can recognise that someone's struggling, do you have like a key message that you've noticed or something that you would say to them as advice?
Yeah, just remember that you're not the only person going through that. Like I said, I think a big turning point for me is being able to go into training, and there's say 15 of us sat around, and I go, "Girls, I'm feeling rubbish today. I've got anxious belly. I didn't want to get out of bed." And a couple of other people say the same thing. So yeah, there's a lot of people are in the same boat as you. And actually, like I said before, surrounding yourself with good people that want to help you get better and be there for you, and speaking to them about it, and being vulnerable, they're the most important things you can do. Yeah, it's really simple advice, but just speak up. It's really difficult sometimes. The first time you speak up will be horrendous and you'll feel awful, but it gets a lot easier. It'll become more of a second nature. It's the only way you're going to get better.
You mentioned in a previous answer the importance of the Professional Cricketers Association, the Professional Cricketers Trust. I guess sort of how impactful are they, and have they been on you and other cricketers, and how important is their role?
Yeah, it's absolutely massive. I honestly can't actually think about how I would be now without the trust. We really don't use them enough as cricketers. Like, we've got this amazing setup that are literally there to help us with our lives, and we definitely don't use them enough. I do now. I absolutely rinse them for everything. It's great. But yeah, they're absolutely amazing. The people that work for them, and for the PCA as well, we get a mentor with each team, and they're all absolutely amazing people and great to speak to, great to help them with your life. So yeah, honestly, I've thanked them a thousand times, so I will carry on doing that. But yeah, they're absolutely brilliant.
And the PCA have given you a little bit of recognition as well, because you're up for the PCA Business Impact Awards, which I think it's coming out tomorrow as we record the results of that.
I was,
Yeah.
yeah. Yeah, so I had that, good little business plug for me actually here. This is great. Yeah, so I started a business called the Throwing Academy, which is basically combining my two passions of injury rehab, helping people feel like not feel pain-free, basically, so helping them with their injury rehab, and then cricket. So I help people throw better so they don't get injured, to help them rehabilitate their throwing injuries, etc. Going to schools and do like really fun throwing and catching classes with them. And yeah, went into it's basically at Dragon's Den last week. So I went in and plugged my business, and they seem to really like it. And I've got a website for it and everything now. So yeah, fingers crossed, we'll find out tomorrow. I actually already know, but we'll find out tomorrow. So yeah, it was a brilliant day, really. Like, it just summed up how amazing the PCA were. Like, the amount they were just they're willing to help. And it just, yeah, it was just like really summed up how great they are and how much they can help you if you use them.
And how are you finding it, running your own business and doing all these things alongside being a professional cricketer?
Yeah, good. So it's been like the last couple of months is like really where I've had the idea and started pushing it. So it's only like really at the beginning, but I find it really hard sitting still. So in the winter, when we're only training 3 days a week, and I'm going, "Well, what am I going to do with the other four?" So yeah, it's been a really good focus for me, and actually, it's probably one of the really big reasons why my mental health is really good at the moment, is because I've got that focus, and I'm a really creative person, and having that creative side of our business, the creative side of it, that I'm like fulfilling that side of me as well, has been really great. But yeah, I'm sure in the summer it'll probably be a bit more difficult, but at the moment I'm really enjoying juggling the two. And Thunder have been brilliant with helping me with that as well. And yeah, we've got so, I feel really lucky that I've got a lot of places and people that can help me, and a lot of support. So I just want to use that as much as possible.
And alongside that as well, you've also joined our friends and partners at the Mintridge Foundation as an ambassador. How are you finding that so far?
Yeah, I love it. Alex is amazing.
She certainly is.
Yeah, she's so great. Yeah, I love it. Like, I've Basically, the reason why I wanted to join, and actually it was completely random because I wanted to start doing something like that about 2 days before I got a message from Alex. I was literally, it was just coming into my head, like, I really want to start going into doing a bit more mentoring. And then I got a message from Alex, and it was perfect timing. But yeah, I think from just thinking back from when I was younger and when I was at school and then a bit after, I didn't really have that that kind of mentor person there, or someone that was really helping me with my life outside of cricket. It seemed like it was, well, I had my teachers at school that were helping me with that, and then I had people at cricket that helped me with cricket, but I didn't have anyone that was like helping me combine them together. And I think because of that, I went, oh, I don't want to play cricket anymore then. I'm just going to sack this off. I'm going to do whatever I want. And I think if I'd had someone there to really mentor me through that, it would have been a lot easier. So I thought, well, I'd love to go into schools and basically do that. And that the Mintridge is, it's perfect. And it's such a great place to work. And there's amazing people around. And it's just, yeah, it's a brilliant charity. I absolutely love what they're doing.
And how does that make you feel when you go in and you are being a mentor, or you're leading a session and you can see other people enjoying the game you love so much and learning? How does that make you feel?
Yeah, it sounds so cliche and so cheesy, but it's what we're here for. Like, I remember, you know, I think there's a certain part of you that has to be a professional athlete, you have to be a little bit selfish. And when you go into work every day, and pretty much everything that you're doing is to make yourself better, and it's kind of for yourself. And I probably struggled a little bit with that at the beginning, because I'm someone that really likes helping other people and giving back, and Mintridge is a perfect way to do that. And yeah, like you said, just seeing young kids and school children playing the sport that you love and loving it too, it's like, oh, it gives you that little buzz, doesn't it? Like, oh, that's my passion and I'm passing on to someone else. It gives you that buzz that I don't get as much playing. I get more of a buzz from watching other people, and you know, it's a different kind, I guess. But it's been great. It's been great for my mental health as well, again. It's been, I've been loving it.
So many exciting things going on for you at the moment, and let's just get a wrap it up by just saying, sort of, new club in 2023, you've got your business, you're working with Mintridge. How excited are you for what the next 12 months has to offer?
Yeah, really, really excited. I mean, I'm obviously, like I said, I moved up to Manchester, I'm loving it here. Started a business, got myself a Mintridge, it's going to be busy. But yeah, like this year I've kind of sort of been the year of growth, and next year I want to just carry on growing. And like I said, my mental health's in a really good place at the moment, and I'm hoping that can carry on going forwards. But yeah, I feel like I've got loads of exciting stuff coming up, which is really great, and we'll just see how we go with them. Not put too much pressure on them, which I keep reminding myself of. That's the key. Just try and enjoy it. Just try and enjoy every minute of it.
I also read somewhere that you have an advanced scuba diving qualification. Will you be putting that to use in 2023, do you think?
Hopefully. I did actually in about 6 weeks ago. We went to Egypt. Yes, one of my sisters is a scuba diving instructor in Thailand, of course, because, you know, why not? When you've got six brothers and sisters, one of them's going to have a pretty crazy job. But yeah, so I did my advanced scuba diving with her. But yeah, hopefully, I'd love to. I think we're hoping to go out to Thailand again, maybe after the season, and do a little bit. That'll be a bit of fun amongst all the craziness.
Certainly exciting year for you coming up. I can't wait personally to see how you progress, both with the cricket and also with Mintridge and stuff. Thank you for speaking with us today and for such a fun, honest interview. And I really hope the people listening enjoyed it. And yeah, all the best going forward. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Nice to meet you, Will.
Once again, a massive thank you to Fee for such an honest and open interview that covered a wide range of topics and delved into many important issues. We cannot wait to see how she fares this season, and will certainly be cheering her on all the way. We would also like to congratulate Fee, as she was named the winner of the PCA Business Awards that we mentioned in the podcast. So congratulations to her, and massively excited to see where her business goes from here. Thank you also to the Minteridge Foundation for helping to organise the interview and for continuing their brilliant work with young aspiring athletes. And we continue to be proud to be partners with them. I'll be back next Tuesday with two guests who also happen to be friends and teammates of mine, as we discuss all things cheerleading and answer the question, how do you set up a brand new cheer squad during a global pandemic and make it a success? In the meantime, make sure to subscribe to Sportspiel on all of your usual podcast providers, and follow us across social media by searching for the handle @SportspielPod.